Warning: this program contains content that may not be suitable to some listeners. It contains decency, truth, ageless wisdom, a father who cares. It's Generations with Kevin Swanson.
Hello, everybody. This is Kevin Swanson. The program is Generations, and once again, we are addressing the most important issues in your life. I have issues we want to discuss today. Issue number one, the U.S. literacy rate fell from 5th in the world in the 1960s to 49th in the world today. We are just somewhere around third world nations in our literacy rates. Ladies and gentlemen, families should be very concerned about what's happening in education today. Homeschoolers are scoring in the 75th and 90th percentile. It is the brightest light in American education today, and yet there are many parents who have not checked it out. Parents who care and love for their children should at least check out homeschooling. And issue number two, the principle of individuality is essential for education. I'll tell you why. Because every child is different. In fact, what's the first thing that parents say when that second child comes out of the womb? They're so different. Yeah. But unfortunately, the system of education we have today does not understand that most basic, simple concept of human behavior. The mantra in modern education is standardized and centralized. When Laura Ingalls Wilder entered the classroom, what was the first question she asked her students, her six students? Where are you? Mr. 12-year-old little boy, where are you? He says, I'm in the fifth reader. Great, we'll start there. And they would just go from there. Every child was in a different reader, and it really didn't matter where they were. She just picked up and went with them. Well, things have changed since then because they couldn't leave it in the hands of Laura Ingalls Wilder. America, of course, became the strongest nation on the face of the earth with one-room schoolhouses and homeschools, but experts, professionals, very, very smart people in districts and state governments began to say, hey, let's centralize control because we know how every child in every family in every corner of this state needs to be educated. And so powers began to centralize, systems began to standardize, and that's exactly the way education went all the way into 1973 when it was centralized in the Department of Education. Today, Republicans and Democrats alike continue to say, hey, let's centralize and standardize education. Children are not widgets. You can't process them through the same system one by one and expect that the results are going to be good on the other end because every child coming into the system is going to be different. The fact of the matter is, folks, some children learn over 6 months, some over 5 years, and they learn in different patterns. Sometimes they're stuck on one thing for 3 months, sometimes on 6 months. It's all a different pattern for every single child. And when you walk into a classroom and you say, every child in this classroom needs to function at this level in math, then you're going to have a big problem. Roughly half the classroom is going to be bored out of their minds because that's going too slow for them. The other half, they're going to be frustrated out of their minds because they can't keep up with it. And that's the math class. Now let's go over to English. We've got a completely different problem. Those that did good in math are not doing well in English. It all started when we tried to centralize and standardize control. Every child is unique and blessed by God. By the way, my children took the standardized tests they're supposed to as homeschool children. Most of my children always do above the 90th percentile. But one of my children did not. But here's the funny thing about her. When she does her math assignments, she has the most beautiful pictures in the world around the margins of the page. Now, when you take the standardized tests, guess what? They don't test you for what you're really good at. Every child created by God with unique gifts and abilities, and they don't even test for it. And yet you have these poor children doing very well in character. It's a crying shame. They don't test for the intangibles. I was at a Department of Education training session here in the state of Colorado. They invited an expert from the University of Tennessee to talk about excellence in teaching. What makes really good teachers? Somebody asked the question about halfway through the afternoon. They said, what is it that contributes to the success of some teachers? Why are some teachers really good and some are really awful? And the expert from Tennessee had a very good answer. He said, you know what? It's very interesting. The students that do very well under certain teachers, it's because those teachers are flexible. They just walk into a classroom and they say, I don't care where any of you are. Just where are you? I'll pick up wherever you are. And that's exactly what we've been saying in homeschooling for 15 years. It's flexibility. He said, but here's the problem. Shows the graphs. These students that get the good teacher, they do not retain a sustained level of improvement unless they have that same teacher for 4 years in a row. It's because children aren't widgets, but they're not computers either. They learn in relationship. Issue number three. Our schools today do not account for these differences, family differences, individual differences, even gender differences. Sometimes you can't take a 7-year-old boy and jam him into a tiny little hole and expect to get something but a mess out of the other end. By the way, they didn't have Ritalin in the 1960s. They didn't have Ritalin in the 1760s. Patrick Henry, one of the greatest men in American history, was a dreamer. He was good for nothing in school. His father brought him home, taught him a few subjects, but could hardly do that. Finally, when he was 20 years old, he borrowed a few law books from a friend and passed the bar exam in 3 weeks. And he became the greatest orator by a long shot in American history, and of course the governor of Virginia for 4 terms. He would have been an abject failure in schools today. Thomas Edison kicked out of school at 7 years of age, accused of being an ignorant, hyperactive fool. They were miserably poor, so his mother taught him at home, and the end result was, of course, well, almost everything you see around you today. Look at the lights. Look at everything we have. Thomas Edison behind it. Photographer Ansel Adams was kicked out of school for being hyperactive. He writes, "I trace who I am and the direction of my development to those years of growing up in our home on the dunes, propelled especially by an internal spark, tenderly kept alive and glowing by my father." Aren't those beautiful words, Ansel Adams? Folks, they would have all been on Ritalin. How many great Edisons, Ansel Adams, or Patrick Henrys are we drugging into oblivion today because we're ignoring the principles that God gives us in the Bible? The principle of individuality, the principle of relationship-based learning, the principle of life integration, the preeminence of character. We're going to talk about a few of these things. My guest is Diane Craft. She's been working with specially gifted, notice I didn't say special needs, specially gifted children for the last 30 years. And she's helped tens of thousands of parents around the nation. Do you have a tough child? Maybe you know a family's been struggling with their son or daughter. I want you to stay tuned today. Ladies and gentlemen, boy, do we have a great program lined up for you today. My name is Kevin Swanson. It's Generations. We're talking about the things that matter most, the people that matter most in our lives, our children. And Diane Craft is here today with us, travels the country helping parents and teachers address learning difficulties. Diane, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure. Happy to be here, Kevin.
And I can't think of anything more important that we could be discussing today. Diane, you work with children with a lot of learning difficulties. You know, when it comes down to it, Diane, all of us have challenges in life.
Yes.
And we all have our gifts. Is it damaging to a child to say you're a special needs child versus a specially gifted child?
The term special needs is definitely not my favorite term, because that would be every one of us. And so we categorize it by learning. In fact, some kids learn their math facts quickly. We say, oh, that's because they're smart. No, it's because we taught to their style. The child who didn't learn it as quickly is very smart, but they learn something else quickly. So it gives that connotation of smart or not smart, and it has nothing to do with that. The majority of kids I work with, in fact, just about all of them, I call them gifted with a glitch. They are very, very bright kids, but they learn differently.
And, you know, that's a freeing concept, isn't it? This idea that children are different. Now it frees us. We don't have to hold them down to the same standards of everybody else.
That's right. And that's the beauty of homeschool. I was thinking, my daughter Sherry's here, of Josh. When he was in sixth grade, she finally said, okay, that's it. I'm homeschooling him, because that was going to be their answer. And they said, oh, he's not getting math. His reading comprehension is 2 or 3 years below level. He's just not functioning. She brought him home, and his reading comprehension was actually above level, but not in a large classroom setting. His math, he made 2 years gain in that year because she taught him in the way that he could learn, the way that worked for him.
And you know, Diane, we laugh about this now, but when my son was very young, we homeschool him, but when he was very young, we think he would have been on intravenous Ritalin in that classroom. He was a challenge and a half, and was for many, many years. And we're so thankful that we homeschooled. And because of the inherent flexibility that is there, some have called it ABD, the American boy disease.
I love it.
And, you know, there are a lot of children using these psychotropic drugs today,
yes,
and it's going through the roof. I read the number 6 million children on Ritalin this year. I just find it hard to believe. Is that exaggerated?
It is just amazing. When I first began, I think, 10 years ago, giving talks about Ritalin and the increase in that, my quote was always, it's increased 300% in the last 5 years. Well, now that was, another 5 years.
Right.
We just had a huge increase in the use of Ritalin, Concerta. In fact, I have seen kids that are 3 years old that they put on that, and it is just outrageous.
And my understanding is it's even more damaging to little children between 2 and 4 years of age. It's not good for them.
The PDR, the physician's desk reference, says it should never be used for anyone under 12. The same with, we have kids taking Zoloft and Prozac and all of the adult drugs that really the PDR doesn't say that it's been studied for them.
And, I think that the drugs have already been proved to have problems. They found out that it stunts growth and it does these other things. So it really does affect them, doesn't it?
After I finished homeschool, my son, I went back into the education system and taught and learned so much from the students that were there. And one of the things I noticed that if they were put on Ritalin in first or second grade, by fifth grade they had increased and they needed to be in a sustained release. Later on, then they would add maybe something to help them sleep. Catapress is often used to help them get to sleep. Then I would see my 6th, 7th, 8th graders often were put on an antidepressant because all we're doing is recirculating that serotonin,
okay,
that feel-good,
mm-hmm,
settle-down, focused neurotransmitter. We're fooling the brain to always recirculate more. No one's saying, I wonder why this child isn't manufacturing as much as his sibling.
Mm-hmm.
And so I saw the increase in the amount of medications, and then they would get to be what we call hypomanic.
Mm-hmm.
They would get uninhibited,
right,
because it was circulating it in a way that the brain wasn't ready for it.
In fact, let me read to you something here as to whether or not the drugs are doing any good. This is a comprehensive follow-up study from Montreal Children's Hospital. The report said, although it appeared that hyperactive kids treated with Ritalin were initially more manageable, the degree of improvement and emotional adjustment was essentially identical at the end of 5 years to that seen in a group of kids who had received no medication at all.
Yes.
And so it appears like it's giving you something at the beginning, but really in the long run, it's not doing anything for you, is it?
What they're finding is exactly right. It does help with the focus because it is a stimulant, but it doesn't help. Many of these children really have a little learning glitch, a little learning block, or a different style of learning that they need.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't help with that.
In the end, it doesn't really make them any better than anybody else. It may even suppress them, and I wonder if it does. I wonder if many of these children are really very talented, and they're the Edisons, they're the Patrick Henrys. But what's happening with the drugs is they're suppressing their ability their creativity, their ability to really excel.
And that is so interesting because so many adults we see who say, I was on Ritalin when I was younger, they're not on Ritalin as adults. They're very creative.
Mm-hmm.
Entrepreneurs, a little bit looser in their organization of life, but accomplishing things that you wouldn't be able to accomplish otherwise.
Are the schools in a box of some sort? Is this, and I already presented this idea that there's a standardization that's happening, but that standardization is a small box, and there are children that just don't fit into that box.
So much so. That's, of course, why the homeschool movement is just growing. So, and in defense of teachers, we're all teachers and parents at heart. They really would love to do something about it, but when you have 30 children coming in to the classroom, and every year they standardize more, and the teachers who have these great ideas and would like to use them, they're told, no, we need to follow this curriculum, and every child has to be here. It's getting more lockstep the more testing we're doing.
And in the end, it's becoming more centralized, too, because the National Department of Education just implemented standardized national testing across all 50 states.
Yes.
So it's not getting any better.
No, that's right. It's when the more you centralize, the more the individual teacher who really went into teaching because she loved children and loved teaching and had great ideas, just squelched the same as probably the Ritalin squelches the creativity of these wonderful little kids.
That's right. Ladies and gentlemen, we're speaking with Diane Kraft, on the issue of ADD, the hyperactive child. The child that has a few more challenges, or different challenges, than other children. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to bring some real solutions to you in a moment as we continue with Generations. Stay tuned. Talk show for 80 million moms and dads who care about their children. The next generation, that's Generations. My name is Kevin Swanson, and I'm speaking with Diane Kraft, who has worked with specially gifted children for the last 30 years of her life. And we have just been touching on ABD, the American Boy Disease, or otherwise known as ADHD. Diane, I want to define ADHD, and I've read this on the web. ADHD is the most common neurobehavioral disorder in childhood. Affects 4 to 12% of U.S. school-aged children. Symptoms may include, here it is, short attention span, impulsive behavior, and difficulty focusing and sitting still. Diane, that's about all five of my children. Should they all be on Ritalin?
I think so. I think you should buy it by the bucket, Kim.
Okay. Is this a made-up disease?
You know, in the 32 years that I've been working with kids, I have been always wondering that myself. We have seen the increase of these kids. I think it is two things. I think definitely it's a disease looking for, you know, a child to attach to.
Yeah.
Because of the numbers of kids, because of the demands that we're having, because of testing, that type of thing.
Mm.
However, one of the things that occurred to me is we need to look at the range. Mm. What I always tell parents is, are we looking at just end of normal, high normal? In other words, this child is, yes, hyperactive. Or are we looking at pathology?
Mm-hmm.
Because you're going to have some of your listeners who are going to say, yes, I am homeschooling them. Yes, I'm giving them all the flexible days I can.
Mm-hmm.
But they truly are what they call bouncing off the walls. I mean, there is a true pathology out there.
There's something going on, and you have to really dig into it and figure out what it is.
Figure out what it is. You know, right. Mark 4:22, I just love that. God says that there's nothing hidden that won't be revealed.
Mm-hmm.
So as we pray, he's going to show us the cause. Mm-hmm. They'll have four children. They're all, you know, in the range. And one, they say yes from baby on. And most of the time, those are the kids who have sensory integration issues. Mm-hmm. What Dr. Lyndon Smith calls the goosey. Touchy kids, the kids who won't wear jeans,
yeah.
Because it's you know, hard for them.
Right.
They can't have things touch on their plate.
Mm-hmm.
So their sensory system, their feedback isn't balanced.
Yeah.
So then they react more to noise.
Right.
So those are the kids that in the school setting they would immediately say medicate. At home, you have days,
yeah.
But you can make it all work, but there are natural things you can do
right.
to make that child's nervous system settle down.
Right, okay. And one of the things is not to set them in front of video games and very, very, you know, stimulating environments and just let them go crazy there. And that's what people do, don't they? They do all the wrong things often.
Yes, because, you know, we're all people.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes a little relief is nice.
Right,
and
right.
So this
right.
child is what we call a high-maintenance child.
Right.
Always needy, needy,
right.
needy. And, you know, I have many parents who feel guilty. They say, you know, I have four children. The other three take probably 10 minutes of the day. This child takes all the rest.
Right, right, right.
You don't feel guilty because they don't want you to intervene. Those other three are doing just fine.
Right. Okay. And oftentimes, are they boys or the girls or both? Or
there are, you know, it was interesting in the studies that they do, the Purdue University study. Many of the studies have found that we have easily three times more boys than girls that
mm-hmm.
have our needs.
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly enough, that corpus callosum, that connection between the left and right hemisphere of the brain,
right.
is made of essential fatty acids. The brain is 60% fat. That also coats the nervous system.
Okay.
Well, they found that boys have a three times higher need for essential fatty acids than girls.
Wow.
And
so it could be a diet thing, too.
Well, it appears, you know, boys tend to like more butter,
mm-hmm.
peanut butter. They gravitate towards
right.
all the oils.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe, yeah, some of it is that. You know, we used to have good food.
Mm-hmm.
We used to have whole dairy. We used to have flax. We used to have whole wheat, real eggs. We got all the good fat for our brain.
And the other thing, Diane, is you look at some of these great men in history, like Patrick Henry and others, they didn't do well in school early on, and yet they did very well later on, like Patrick Henry. They did very well. So is it true. I think Dr. Raymond Moore made a big point out of this, that many boys, really, you shouldn't clap them into some narrow, confined space and give them 16 books at the beginning of the year at 7 years of age. It just is not healthy for them.
That is so true. In fact, all the studies show that boys really aren't ready to start formal learning until they're age 8.
Wow. Wow, exactly. And that's the average.
Uh-huh. Exactly. That's the average.
Okay.
So that's why we say, is it within range or is it in pathology?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's still a good range.
Right.
So for boys, in fact, in California for a long time, they weren't starting boys till age 8 in a certain area, and they saw, oh, yeah, then they made up all that time.
Oh, yeah.
Girls by, you know, 6 or 5 are yelling the answers.
Right.
Next door.
Right. And the boys are feeling stupid.
Feeling so stupid.
Right.
So,
right.
We just say, just use duct tape. Pink duct tape works right. Real good on those girls.
And the more we talk, the more I think we're doing a lot of things wrong. We're stacking wrong things upon wrong things. We're really going to get some messed up kids. We're not careful.
Well, we're not any time you make anything big. The bigger centralized high schools we're getting, you know, that's mm-hmm. where we get the difficulties. The middle
right.
schools are just getting huge, 1,300.
Right.
We need to get back to smaller.
Smaller, smaller. Get back into Laura Ingalls Wilder, one-room schoolhouse of 6 children. It worked really well that way. We built the strongest nation on the face of the earth that way. And we're not building a stronger nation today. You heard the statistics, 46th in the world. We're the 46th in the world for literacy rates. So we're not doing anything right, and yet we're doing something right with homeschooling. Why is homeschooling work? Why does it typically work?
But you know, in fact, one of the UNC studies found that actually the one-room schoolhouse, that's where they got the best results in their college results.
Amazing.
What are we doing well in homeschooling?
Mm-hmm.
We are considering the individual, tailoring the curriculum to fit them.
There you
if
go.
We don't have a scared parent,
mm-hmm.
a parent who gets their child's life be run by the books that come in
right.
with the mail, who knows that paper clips are used to take out big chunks of a book
right.
that you can put an X through the things that you don't want them to do right now. You want to
right.
attend to that later. When they are not curriculum driven, and then they see, they see the individuality, they see the flexibility, they
there
can add
go.
The love and the care,
mm-hmm.
and frankly, they get good nutrition at home.
It sounds to me like God's system works pretty well,
because
that's the one he recommended in the Bible.
He put together.
Yeah, it's amazing how wise he is. Not really that amazing, seeing as he created it. Diane, when you talk about diet, what do you think is important? I've heard sugar isn't important. In fact, I got to give you a story on this one. I preach on Sundays from time to time, and I get a little animated. And this little 4-year-old boy whispers to his dad about 2 weeks ago. He says, "Dad, Pastor had too much sugar in his cereal this morning."
Oh, how cute.
So I'm a little hyperactive myself. Should I limit my sugar?
Well, you know, we love sugar. We call people honey. You know, it's a term of endearment.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we call them sugar when we really love them. Many kids are reactive to that, though. And we have the more we use the cavalier use of antibiotics.
Uh-huh.
In utero, you know, when the parent has an infection, or for ear infections, you know, 50% of them are resolved just by themselves. When we have that cavalier use of antibiotic, we set the child up for a sugar intolerance. And so what happens is then they get reactive to sugar, whereas they'll say, yeah, but Judy here can have all the sugar she wants, and she doesn't react. All we give him is just, you know, a little sugar cereal, and he bounces off the wall. Different chemistries. So then, if we went back to, sometimes I tell parents, I just introduce them again to the crock pot.
Yeah.
You know, just cook things naturally. You can have lots of good sweets without having it packaged.
Yeah, yeah. In the package, maybe a little more damaging. Is that the only thing you say in terms of treating these children who maybe have these learning difficulties? Are there other diet tips you can give?
There are other diet tips. By the way, for sugar, people say, well, we can't get along without sugar. Actually, honey feeds the nervous system.
Sure.
And so that comes with lots of minerals. And so they have oatmeal in the morning, not the packaged kind, which would be like a Snickers candy bar.
Mm-hmm.
So we say, look at a Snickers candy bar and add the carbs and the sugar that's going to be 60 grams.
Yeah.
And then compare it to everything else. You know, we could want them to have a dessert a day, but not a dessert all day.
Right.
Without notice.
That's exactly right, yeah.
And I can't tell you, I just got an email yesterday from Kathy Kress, actually, a gal in California, and she said, Diane, I can't tell you, because I had spoken out there. She said, the changes I see in all four of my children since I have changed their diet, she said, I just wouldn't have believed it. I hear that, I would have to say, hundreds of times when parents finally said, you know, I didn't want to believe it.
It's got to be the most simple and most basic thing you can do, really.
Cheap.
Yeah.
Inexpensive. When you start eating naturally and getting, you know, shop on the periphery of the store where things are plugged in, where the live foods are. And
yeah.
Only dip into the aisles for mayonnaise and tuna. You can feed the brain. And that makes, I can tell you, simple, easy, and makes a big, big difference.
Ladies and gentlemen, all we're doing is raising the next generation, and we're talking about that today. That's a pretty important topic. We're speaking with Diane Kraft. She has a master's in education. She's been working in the area of special education for a long time, and we are enjoying this interview. We'll be back with more. We're going to talk about more of the common problems we have in education in just a moment. We'll be back. Another program that will change your life or your children's lives or maybe your grandchildren's. It's generations. My name is Kevin Swanson, and we're with Diane Kraft today. It's great to have Diane here. Diane, we want to talk a little bit more about learning difficulties, because we know it's not just attention deficit. It's lots of learning difficulties. Diane, what can go wrong? What are the most common problems parents or teachers find when they bring these little 7 and 8 year olds into their teaching environment? They begin to teach them.
So it is interesting. So many things that I hear from parents deal with the writing issue. Many times they'll say, well, they're ready to read, but they just hate to write.
And I think we can ditto that. I think writing's the hardest thing for them.
It is. And, you know, there are, basically, I always look at, is it just a learning style, or is it a blocked learning gate?
Okay.
So the three gates are the visual gate, the auditory gate, and the writing gate.
Okay.
Now, workbooks and worksheets are curriculums that really push starting those kindergartners, writing and such, they assume that the writing is their learning gate.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, when they write it, it's going to go to their long-term memory. That works for many adults, doesn't it?
Right.
We write it down, goes to long-term memory.
Right.
What if that child has a blocked learning gate, either because he's mixed dominant, right-handed and left-eyed,
right,
or left-handed, right-eyed, which we see less, or because he's not easily crossing the midline, so the corpus callosum is a block, so they have to think harder to do the writing,
mm-hmm.
Then when they write, they're not learning it. So they'll say they don't want to write, they're very sloppy, they don't want to do their work. I think one of the biggest issues we have is sitting these kids in front of workbooks.
Right. Right. They're doing too much writing too early for the most part, aren't they?
Yeah. Too early. And some curriculum actually use cursive for kindergartners. And developmentally, neurodevelopmentally, that's not correct. They're not ready for that stage.
My son's in the control room right now, but I'll just say he was an awful writer for years. And it's just been the last year where his writing's really improved. He uses the word processor an awful lot, but he can really write, and he can write some succinct paragraphs, and he's doing a great job. But it wasn't happening 2 years ago.
And then we say, isn't that part of the boy factor?
Probably.
You know, the little girls at age 3 and 4, they're grabbing all the little preschool ready to read readiness books and filling them all in. They love it, and the boys look at them and just walk away.
Yeah.
That should be our cue.
Right,
that
right.
They don't learn the same way.
Mm.
We shouldn't be putting that stuff in front of them. We should do more unit-based, more study types of things, help them learn hands-on.
There you go.
That's why we brought them home.
Mm-hmm.
So many homeschoolers I talk to, they're just wonderful parents. They're working so hard. They have these bright little guys, and they are just butting heads, as we could say, because they are feeling they need to follow the curriculum.
They're bringing the classroom into the home, and it just doesn't work that way.
And you say, that's why we didn't bring them home just to torture them at home versus, you know, torture
right.
them at school. Yeah,
that's right.
I want to torture them. They're going to
that's
be
right.
tortured. No, really. And so I would say the number one thing is to just really feel you can depart from the curriculum.
Okay.
Parents are qualified
yes.
to decide what
right.
a child needs to learn, not the curriculum manufacturer.
Nobody knows and loves that child, for the most part, as a parent would.
Absolutely.
Right. Diane, what else can be done in this writing area? Because sometimes it is a bona fide problem.
where it's not an age issue, but they're just having a hard time writing. What can be done to really assist those students?
Exactly right. In fact, last week I saw a 13-year-old who was on an Alpha Smart, like a laptop computer, because basically his writing was primitive. It's like a first grader. And yet, of course, cognitively, he was a gifted child, doing well in everything else orally. He truly, that slipped over from out of the range into pathology. In other words, into a deal. So then we use crossing the midline kind of exercises. It's called the writing aid exercise. Dr. Getman came up with it 30 years ago. Exactly. Simple crayon, piece of paper, and we have turned hundreds of kids around using that. It's not my method. It's just a method I learned.
It's a lateral eight. They did a huge lateral eight. They just keep going over and over.
On its side, and if they want to get a little more information, I think we have it on our website. It probably is someplace else, but I don't know.
Why don't you give that right now?
It is. Just www.dianecraft.org.
Okay.
DianeCraft.org. And we have information on the web, articles on smart kids who hate to write and what to do about them. You can correct them at home, and it really loosens that up. Another one that parents say is, they're so bright, but they can't spell.
Yeah.
Their spelling is awful.
Yeah.
That I love to hear. That's the easiest one to
Is that because they're having a hard time remembering or memorizing things, or is it something to do with the brain?
But you know, just as you were even saying with your daughter with the 1+1, you know that plan A for memorization of math facts or spelling is to just memorize it.
Right.
But there is a plan B.
Okay.
And that's the plan B is what many of my parents haven't been aware of. Plan B is you give them a strategy or a scaffolding. Such as, let's say for 1+2, let's say you want 2+1, you want them to remember if they don't. Well, you just take the 1 and you put a little blob on top and the 2, you know, you have him be a drippy nose, a little 2, there's a blob on top, and then the little 2-year-old was in the sandbox and his nose is dripping, dripped all the way down to his feet. So when they see the 2, you see you get their imaginative side. They see the 2 in their mind's eye. They see 2 blobs.
I see. So they need to learn to draw distinctions, and they do it by way of pictures, better than numbers.
Exactly. The right brain is picture and meaning and imagination and weird and Hollywood.
Okay.
When we're asking to memorize, we're only using the left brain. If that works fine, we don't have to do anything else. But if not, we abandon that. We don't just keep. I mean, you can repeat it. As you see, that's one way. But it's more frustrating.
Oh.
Or in one day, I get these guys who couldn't do 1+1 or 1+2. I mean, that is not me. It's a method anyone can use at home. And get they are adding, before they leave, 3 columns of numbers. Because what are they doing? They see the 5. They see 5 dots on there. You put the piece on the whole, and you make it whole-brained. So they're just adding. Well, that's the same with spelling. How do we teach spelling? Number one, through the writing gate. What if that's not their learning gate? That doesn't mean they can't write, but they don't get that into their long-term memory.
Right.
Well, then we need another method. You know, the old saw is the description of a fool is a person who does the same thing and expects a different result.
And we do that in education way too much.
All the time.
Right.
Slower and louder.
Uh-huh.
Let's just slower, louder, get them in smaller groups, and let's just repeat this all year long. In fact, I've seen a little guy next week, and they said, you know, we have to get him in before school because they want to retain him. So, you know, one more year of doing the same thing, if that would have worked, it would have worked the first time.
Right.
That's what I like to tell these homeschool parents. If what you're doing is working, fine. If it isn't working, abandon ship, completely use a different method for spelling. Enrich the words with color.
The child isn't in the box. Get out of the box and go to where he's at teach him where he is.
Perfect.
Just that simple.
Well put. Exactly.
Yeah. And some children, are you saying, are right-brained, and some are more left-brained.
Yes.
And so those are more right-brained. You need just a different approach. Is it true that our modern system is more left-brained? Is that what we're saying?
That's so true. Do you know, in the animal kingdom, half the animals are left paw dominant, half are right paw dominant. We don't have that in the human kingdom, but half of our students that we teach, our children, are right brain dominant, half are left brain dominant. Left brain dominant kids do well with the curriculum. Curriculum, what is it? Sequential, black and white, linear. They do well with it. Our right brain kids chafe at that.
Yeah.
So sometimes we call them high maintenance because of the fact that they need another method. Yeah. I call them high fun.
Right, exactly. And in the end, they may be the geniuses, the inventors, the great orators, et cetera, the people that really made our nation and made our world today.
They create left-brainers standardized.
Yes.
We need them both.
Ladies and gentlemen, again, we are speaking with Diane Kraft on, wow, a really important subject, educating, training our children, and they're all different. Some radio programs are just whining about it. We're actually fixing the problems, and we're doing it today on Generations. We'll be back in a moment to wrap up this cool discussion. Hyperactive, dyslexic. You heard these words before? That's what we're talking about today on Generations. It's our children. It's how we teach them. Are we sticking them in the box and cranking things down on them, or are we maximizing the God-given gifts and abilities that he's given them? Well, that's the issue, and Diane Kraft is with me today. And Diane, we didn't touch on dyslexia. I want to ask you about it because it is so common, especially in reading. Dyslexia, what do you think? Sam Blumenfeld was in here, and he said it's because we're not teaching phonics. What do you think?
There was a time when we weren't teaching phonics. However, dyslexia's been around many, many years.
Okay.
And there is an auditory dyslexia, which phonics would impact, but there's a visual dyslexia, too.
Sure.
And, you know, I don't mean to come off as an expert who says this is what dyslexia is. There are as many opinions about dyslexia as there are about ADD and everything else. I'll just give you my experience and where I come from. I find when I see children that if I don't find dyslexia in all three blocks, all three learning areas, I call it a dysfunction.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, it's affecting them. But it's in the visual. What happens to these guys is when they are visually tracking, not only the BSDs turn, but it'll turn not only vertically, laterally, but vertically, BP, and the UM wants to flip
right,
for these
right.
guys.
Seen that, yep.
If it's third degree dyslexia, which means they'll be at least 2 years behind, they will scramble. THE will be HET.
Oh, okay.
Scramble. So
okay.
Is it just right. first degree, just a lateral reversal?
Mm-hmm.
Is it second degree, also vertical reversals? Or is it third degree, a true scrambling?
Diane, what do we do with dyslexia? What do you think? I mean, when you talk to it and you help parents that run into this problem.
You know, I have a wonderful, and I was so hoping this might come up, a little guy I saw 2 weeks ago. He's 8 years old, actually had turned eight in November, so he'll be nine soon. I'll call him Billy.
Okay.
His parents have four children. The mom and dad came. Dad took off of work to come because this young man was so bright they could see that, but he couldn't read at all, couldn't even spell his last name.
Wow.
Now, that would be a third-degree dyslexic.
Yes.
Not just a minor, not mild, not moderate, but severe. Oh, I was so thrilled to see him because before he left, because we abandoned, see, auditorily, he was taught phonics. His mother did a wonderful phonics program.
Okay.
He didn't glue. It didn't hold in there
right.
because of the dyslexia. Sound scrambled for him and didn't glue. The writing, everything was upside down and backwards, even in his name. I don't mean every letter, but many of them. So he had all three. Before he left, he was reading the word city and there and here. In fact, he was reading a whole little book, Why We Abandoned the Auditory Gate. He said, that's not working for right now. Abandoned the writing gate and only did the photographic memory gate. Showed him how to take pictures of the word city, and he was reading. So he came back the next week. Instead of doing it all in one session, I divided it. And the dad said, his week has been so different. He saw himself as a learner because
wow.
we helped him see the smart part of himself. We still have to fix those two gates.
Maximized on his God-given ability, which happened to be his visual.
Many kids have a good photographic memory.
Right.
If they're getting stuck in the other gates, always go right brain.
Diane, there's so much more we could say, but you have helped tens of thousands of parents and their children on these issues and more. How do parents get in touch with you again?
The website is just dianekraft.org. What we try to give on there are articles, Smart Kids Who Hate to Write, How to Teach Right Brain Math, like, you know, for your little gal with a one plus one, how to help a dyslexic child. We have a whole article on those that they can download, and our whole goal is to help them have the ability to just think about themselves as the expert, too, because they're the flexible one, and that's what these kids need. We have videos on teaching a right brain child, 3 hours of videos if they want how to do spelling and math, all that. We have products, but we also have much free information
Folks, that's DianeCraft.org, D-I-A-N-N-E, Craft, C-R-A-F-T.org. If you'd like to get in touch with Diane, please check out her website at the very least. Diane, if you'd like to wrap things up for a moment, what can you say to parents who have children? They're struggling. It's not easy to raise children. What can you say to them to encourage them as we wrap up the program today?
I would encourage them that they truly are their child's best expert. There is not a label that they can have, whether it's SI, attention, ADD, hyperactive, learning disability, dyslexia, bipolar, sensory integration, Asperger's, or autism. It doesn't matter where they are on that scale. They are their child's expert. And don't be cowed by the fact that the school system is saying we need to test them and we have specialties. Sometimes we dip in for speech. Sometimes we can get private speech. But either way, otherwise, they are the best expert at home. And be flexible.
Let's appreciate those children. They are God-given gifts to all of us, and they have God-given gifts. And let's appreciate them and maximize on their abilities. Let's not put them in the box. I think that's the message today from Diane Craft. Folks, we're going to be back in a moment to wrap up the program. It's been a good one. I'll be back in a moment. Generations, and we talk about the things that matter most on this program. By the way, did you ever wonder how in the world we survived before they invented Ritalin? How did we get by? I've got a couple of ideas. This is back in the 1800s. How did they get by without Ritalin? Number one, they limited candy to Christmas Day, and the breakfast gruel didn't contain any Cocoa Puffs. Number two, after milking 50 dairy cows, an 8-year-old boy just didn't have the energy to be hyperactive. They weren't egalitarians. They just let boys be boys instead of pressing them into a unisex mold in some sterile unisex classroom. People actually cracked the Book of Proverbs, and they actually read the owner's instructions on how to raise kids. Carefully followed those instructions before they ran out and listened to psychiatrists, psychologists, and other assorted snake oil salesmen. Children were also, more often than not, raised by their own parents and not by state-appointed experts. In the 1800s, there were far fewer video games, television, and other hyper-stimulating, useless forms of entertainment. No compulsory attendance laws, so little boys could be little boys until they were done with being little boys. Drugging kids? Well, they had chloroform. Things got really bad. But for the most part, the ruler and the spanking stick seemed to work pretty good. And the hyperactive teens? Well, Almanzo Wilder's father's bullwhip seemed to do the job. You have to read Farmer Boy to get that one, the last in the Laura Ingalls Wilder set. 6 million kids on Ritalin, and I wonder how many parents are listening to this program today. Probably not 6 million. But it's time for all of us to wake up. Drugging our kids is not the answer. It's time to get some common sense. Let's abandon the smooth-tongued wizards that are selling you the wrong education, the wrong drugs. Go back to the book. The book, the Bible, holds the eternal principles of truth, first-order principles for all of life. Listen to what the Bible says before you listen to another scientist or doctor with a new theory that will be contradicted in just 5 more years. That's our wrap-up. My name is Kevin Swanson. We appreciate our sponsors on this program. Please support our sponsors if you want this program to stay on the station. At least give them a call and tell them thank you for supporting this program. We're getting the word out, folks. My name is Kevin Swanson. Check out our website, www.kevinswanson.com, for more information on our guests, our sponsors, and lots of interesting articles. KevinSwanson.com. We'll be back next week, folks. Same station, same time. Stay tuned.
Generations is produced by Christian Home Educators of Colorado, together with our fine business partners, George Secrets Insurance, McKinney Motors, Christian Cottage Schools, Christian Liberty Academy, and Reformation Church in Castle Rock. Executive producer is Dave Buhner. You will find the products and services mentioned on this program at kevinswanson.com. That's kevinswanson.com. Join us again next week as we continue to build for a new generation for heaven's sake.